Thanks for tuning in to Hobbs and Horror Movie Review Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Hobbs and Horror. I'm Eric.
Eric?
Huh?
Are you okay?
Yeah, why? Did I do that wrong?
No, I just want to check it. I just want to check it in. Jason, are you okay? I'm okay. Are you?
Are you okay? Are you sure you're okay?
Look, I'm really glad that you're doing okay, and I just, I wanted to call.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Are you sure?
Sure you're okay.
Are we going to do this for like 10 minutes? Because,
Mr. Eddie, Mr. Eddie.
Hey, man, can we start the podcast before you start talking about the movie?
I just want to say before we get going, I just want to say that Mr. Eddie, he's always checking to see if people are okay. But who's checking to see that Mr. Eddie is okay?
Yeah. And obviously he didn't, because he might have died at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I don't think there's a might have.
So we're back again. And as promised, I think in our last episode, we did The Lost Highway, rocking it at a 7.6 IMDb, which has got to be the highest we've done to date, right?
Probably.
So, I don't know if we discussed this on a previous podcast, but I kind of, in my youth, went down a rabbit hole to try and figure out what this movie is about. I don't recommend anybody do that, because it's David Lynch and it's not about anything.
Yeah.
But so what we're going to do is, Gavin, I'm going to turn it over to you. You're going to give your synopsis of the plot, and then I'm going to add to it based on what I researched when I was younger.
Okay.
What I remember.
Sure. Wow. Okay. So we start out. It's kind of a small liberal arts college. Paul Giamatti is a professor, and he's got some students. And it's a tradition that each Christmas break that one of the professors has to stay and watch over the kids during Christmas break if they don't have family to go home to. Paul Giamatti gets stuck with that unfortunate,
Jason, do you know what this is?
I'm waiting. I'm still
wait. Not enough yet. Okay.
Well, and as things happen, we learn more about the students. We learn more about Paul Giamatti. We learn more about a little bit of everybody and all the trauma that they've gone through in life. And it comes to the fore. And although at the beginning the teacher, the students, and everybody else didn't really like each other, by the end, they really understood that they were all very much the same person.
Breakfast Club.
No.
Nah.
At first I thought maybe Good Will Hunting, but I know it's not Good Will Hunting.
No,
Paul Giamatti is not in
it. I don't know
who Paul Giamatti is, so I can't
It's the Holdovers.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of this movie, so.
It's really good.
Okay, so can we do a synopsis of the actual movie we watched?
Yes. So we have Bill Pullman, who plays Fred Madison, and he is a jazz musician. He plays the saxophone. He plays a very wild saxophone. Apparently quite successful at it, too, because he lives in a very nice house. And he has I presume it's his wife. Could be girlfriend, but I think it's his wife. Played by Patricia Arquette. And they have an uncomfortable relationship, it seems like.
To say the least.
Yeah. And after a few strange occurrences, somehow Patricia Arquette is killed. And all signs point to it being Bill Pullman. So Bill Pullman goes to prison. Then one morning, when the prison guards go to check on him, he's not there. But in his place, Balthazar Getty, who plays Pete Dayton, comes out, and he has to get let go because he's not the guy who killed the wife. And we follow his story, where he is a mechanic who works for Richard Pryor in a wheelchair, and apparently is the favorite mechanic of Mr. Eddie, who is some kind of a gangster character. And we follow that along for a while. But the trouble here is that Pete Dayton develops strong romantic feelings for some chick named Alice, who is Mr. Eddie's girl, also somehow mixed up in porn, although it's a little kind of vague, I think. And so Mr. Eddie sort of finds out, and Ellis might not be completely honest with Pete as well. So there's some intrigue there.
And we should also point out, I don't think you said this, but Alice is Patricia Arquette.
Yes.
Too, so it's,
yes, Alice is Patricia Arquette. So I don't remember what her name is in the beginning.
But it's Renee.
Okay. So Patricia Arquette plays both romantic interests with just different color hair. And that's, I mean, that's more or less it from there on out. Eventually, Bill Pullman comes back.
Okay. So I have actually a lot to add to this. I was surprised. I thought you would. I thought
well, I don't
have
know.
A lot less.
I mean,
to add.
You want me to do like a 2-hour synopsis?
No. No. So what I would add to that, though, is that, okay, so at a point at the beginning of the movie, which I think is a really important thing to note, is that Bill Pullman says that he doesn't like video cameras because he likes to remember things the way, with not necessarily how they happen, but the way he remembers them happening.
Yeah.
And this whole movie is you're seeing it through Bill Pullman's eyes. So you're not necessarily seeing what's really happening, but you're seeing what Bill Pullman in his mind thinks is happening. So, okay. so to speak. So at the beginning of the movie, the reason why it is so awkward is because Bill Pullman is on the brink of going insane.
Okay.
Okay. And there are a number of things that probably happen at the beginning of the movie that don't really happen. He just thinks they're happening because he's going insane.
Okay.
Okay. So then he inevitably hits his breaking point, goes insane, kills his wife, gets thrown in jail. And when you see, so then there's a very notable scene in The Lost Highway where it just shows like a weird highway. And he's just driving down the highway.
Yeah.
And that is supposed to be like him kind of like in his mind, he's creating a different world for himself. And that's what happens when he becomes Balthazar Getty.
Okay.
And if you notice in Balthazar Getty, at the beginning, when he first becomes Balthazar Getty, his life is perfect. He has a great girlfriend. Yeah. His parents are really cool.
Yeah.
He has a good job.
Yeah.
People like him. But then Alice comes into his life, who ironically is Patricia Arquette, who ruined his life as Bill Pullman.
Uh-huh.
And over throughout the movie, he falls in love with Patricia Arquette's character again, and inevitably his whole life unravels and goes to shit again.
Okay. That sounds great. I think that's horseshit, but so, that sounds great.
Well, I was going to say, like, so we should probably preface it that this is what you feel is going
this
on.
This is what I, through everything yeah. I read, this is what I remember as basically what the synopsis
the prevailing theories on
the movie. Of the movie is. Okay. If you ask me,
yeah.
If you were to ask David Lynch, he'd be like, wow, that's really clever. I would have never thought of that.
Yeah.
Because I don't think David Lynch... I think David Lynch just makes things that he thinks look cool and sound cool and stuff like that. I don't really think David Lynch has any.
Well, I know that people have asked him about his movies and like what the meaning behind them or like what they were about, and he just won't even. He'll be like, "Fuck you," not
yeah.
And I think that's because he doesn't have a meaning
right.
behind his music.
Because if you did, you would have no problems going in depth about it.
Yeah,
like, you know, especially if there's so many levels to this movie and you know it doesn't necessarily have to make sense. I mean, there's other movies that don't make sense, like Donnie Darko. You know
that doesn't make sense.
There's not really. No, I mean I don't think there's ever been anyone who's been able to fully explain that movie.
Maybe not fully, but it's pretty coherent.
Well, yeah, I mean there's certain parts that you can be like, okay, that's why this happened or whatever. But overall, like what was going on. I don't think anyone's been able to fully explain that movie.
Did you watch S. Darko?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
But, you know, what I was getting at, though, is like, you know, Donnie Darko and movies like that. You know, I'm assuming that director has probably been asked, you know, can you explain this movie? You know, and he probably would go into, you know, what is it, you know, like, well, it's supposed to kind of represent this. Maybe not like this is what it's about, but this is what it's supposed to represent, you know, and vague sort of like, you know, that we did this to kind of invoke this feeling or we did, you know, but saying I'm not going to explain this at all means to me, I am just a fraud. that I'm just making these movies. And
I don't say it as a fraud, but his style is just, you know, he's thinking of things that
well, you look at the look
cool,
at, but, yeah, but you look at the rating, like a 7.6. Like, I feel like it's a lot of people that, like, don't understand it, but, like, it's really easy to give a filmmaker, like, a lot more credit when it's something that you don't understand, but you think it's so, it just must be so, such a powerful movie or such a, so hard to understand that you're just, nobody gets it. So they're going to give it, like, this really high rating. I mean, I don't see it. I don't
see,
know.
See, okay, so.
I am incredibly surprised with how high the IMDb rating
is.
And not even, and I'm not even saying that, like, I disagree with it. I'm just surprised that it is, because I would expect a lot of people to give it a zero, you know, being like this movie was a waste of my time.
Yeah.
But I think that he does do a very good job of creating intrigue, creating, you know, like it makes so little sense that you want to understand it. And I think that's the magic of what David Lynch does, is that and in the same way, like, it is no different than making a shitty horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. He's appeasing people in a completely different way than what you're seeing in theater and or in normally in a movie. And one of the things I really like about the fact that you can't figure this out is that, so maybe you guys think that the synopsis I just gave to you is just a bunch of horse shit.
No, it sounds.
But I don't think
it's bad. I just don't think it's a good idea to try to put any answer to it.
But I think what's beautiful about what he does is that you can make it what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very powerful thing. And I think that is very appealing to a lot of people.
Yeah. See, and I love movies that are kind of like that. You know, I like being able to fill in the blanks. I mean, there's movies that, you know, leave a lot to imagination. We watched that All Eyes movie as an example of a horror movie where there's so many things they intentionally leave out so that you have to paint that picture in your head. And I appreciate that, but I feel like when they don't give you enough to create that, like it would, I don't know. I'm biased because, like, I've never really understood David Lynch. I've never really, you know, like, there's a few movies I've watched, like, you know, was it Blue Velvet?
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that, but I don't even remember much of that one at this point. But I just feel like it's really, like, tough to do that with this movie, like, to create that. But that's just me, and maybe that's, you know, for me as a movie watcher, it's just more difficult for me to do that. I don't know. What do you think, Gavin?
I don't know. What am I responding to?
I mean, what Eric said, like, about that he intentionally leaves things vague, intentionally leaves things so that you can fill each person who watches it can kind of fill in
their own. I want to be clear. I don't even know that that's what David Lynch intends to do. I think David Lynch just is, I mean, for a lack of a better term, I think David Lynch has got a crazy, crazy mind.
Mm-hmm.
And he just dreams up all this weird shit and puts them into movies. But that's what people find appealing about the way he does it.
Yeah.
Is that it doesn't make any sense. And it makes so little sense that you almost become devoted to, like, figuring out what it could mean. And then in a way you create your own meaning from it.
Yeah.
It's meant to invoke something in the person that's watching it.
Yeah. I think originally, like, I approached David Lynch like I should try to understand David Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
But I've come around on that, and now I think of him first and foremost as a painter, like literally a painter, because that's what he does. He paints.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he takes that mindset and brings it when he does film. So there is a lot of that when you watch whatever it was that he filmed, you are like looking at one of his paintings. It's a 2-hour long moving painting, but what you take away from that isn't necessarily what he put into it, but he wouldn't care. He would be happy with whatever you get out of it. And I think that's how he does a lot of his, he has some coherent movies.
Okay. That's what I was going to
say. There are some, they're not, most of them I would say are not, But there are some. The Straight Story, coherent. Elephant Man, coherent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Blue Velvet, like, you can make sense of it, but it's still weird.
Yeah. So what I would say...
Inland Empire is completely nonsense.
So what I would say to that, though, is, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you don't have to make something coherent for it to be enjoyable or for it to have some sort of value. The only thing I would say is it is a lot easier to make something that is incoherent and seemingly random. So I feel like...
I will agree with you there, but I do think that... that my default when I see something babble and incoherent, my default is to hate it. But David Lynch, I think, does it so well that I don't hate it. And it's not just like, I think Lost Highway was the one I went down the deepest rabbit hole to get. But even when I watched like Blue Velvet and stuff like that, it was still intrigued by what the hell was happening in this movie.
Have you ever seen Jacob's Ladder? No. Now, Gavin made a reference to it when we were watching the movie.
Yeah.
I would say that Jacob's Ladder is a really good, like what I would consider to be a great representation of a movie that isn't always coherent, but it kind of has a general, like it pushes you in a direction. And there is like a, like, from what I've heard, the movie is about a guy who's dying. And as he's dying, his life is kind of flashing before his eyes type of thing. So it kind of jumps around and it does all this weird shit.
I think it has an explanation, but it's really not obvious when you're watching it.
Yeah. But so that would be a movie that I would consider to be that type of style really well done. That holds your interest. The style of it holds your interest. You know, Gavin has said before, like, when a couple of the movies that now that we've watched recently for the podcast, he has said, you know, there's a difference between a slow burn and being boring. You know, I would say there's a difference between someone's style and just being boring. You know, like when at the beginning of this movie, and you pointed out it shifts, which there obviously there was a purpose to that then, even though we're not really let in on that, but there. You know, for the listener, there was like, I would say the first half of the movie or maybe first half an hour of the movie.
It's just really awkward.
Yeah, like there's long. I was trying to analyze what the style was and they were talking normal, but they were just long pauses in between each character replying. So it just and I think it was sort of trying to invoke a sense of like foreboding or like, you know, just. But it went on a little too long, and you're just like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, but I would say, you know, there's like, I don't have any issues because, I mean, you look at some of the shit that I watch, man. Like, it doesn't have to always make sense, you know? And I don't have an issue with that, but when you got somebody like David Lynch, who's just so highly regarded. And then, you know, I feel like it's almost like you have to like them if you like the, like, weird movies. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a thing. Like, I don't think I've met hardly anybody who likes, like, weird, crazy movies like this and doesn't really love David Lynch. And I feel like...
I think you're onto something with that. That's how I feel by not liking... now I'm drawing a blank on his name. John Waters.
Yeah.
I don't care for John Waters, but you can't say that to some people.
Right. But I think, you know, there's, like I said before, like if you're going to make a bunch of weird shit, like that's fine. There's value in that. There is something to be said for that. That's a different type of art. Just like there's abstract art and then there's realism or whatever. There's all these different types of art, right? So it doesn't mean that one is better than the other, but, you know, abstract is definitely a hell of a lot easier to make because you can drop the brush on it and be like, I meant to do that.
No, see, and I completely disagree with you because I think abstract is on the surface. It might look like it's easier to make, but to make good abstract art is very difficult.
Well, I'm trying to, maybe that's not a good comparison then. Cause
I think that anybody can make a shitty movie, man. But David Lynch doesn't make a shitty movie. He makes a movie that leaves you wondering.
So like,
I think that's really hard.
Andy's got a great eye. I mean, even if it doesn't make sense, it's good to like your eyes are drawn to the screen, right?
So I would pose this then. If they took a 5-minute segment of that movie out and replaced it with anything else, would you be like, would you notice that there was something different? Would you notice that, like, what I'm saying is like, there's a lot of randomness, it seemed like. A lot of things going on that if you were to take a chunk of that out and just even, like, if we were to just take 10 minutes of the movie out, would you be like, hey, this doesn't make sense now, or this doesn't?
No.
Right. So what I'm getting at is, like, the reality of it is that a lot of it is random. A lot of it is, so, like, you can't point to something and say, well, he did this, you know, this really good, but this didn't really fit with this, because it doesn't have to fit, because it's all random. It's all
right.
So it's really, that's why I'm saying it's easier. Like, if he wants to throw a midget in there talking backwards, he can do that, because we're not going to call him out on it.
There wasn't enough of that.
But does it have to make, it doesn't have to make sense.
You're absolutely right. But at the end of the movie, it still has to leave you with that intrigue. And I'll even say, like, you use the example of the All Eyes thing.
Yeah.
And when I watched All Eyes, I'll agree with you. They left a lot of things open to your mind, but it didn't have the intrigue to me that this movie has ever had to me.
Well, I think that's because it was the plot of it was based around a monster, and it was a very singular plot, whereas this is, like, really, like, vague. It's very open to so many different ideas. I mean,
and that's what I'm saying is that he has a very unique style.
Yeah.
And whether it's an abstract style, but I still think it's because if it was that easy to do it and David Lynch has had success with it, everybody would do it. But not a lot of people do this style, because I think it's a lot harder than you might think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Gavin, what do you think?
I don't know either. I don't know that I can think of anybody else who's tried to do it with any success.
The way I look at it is, it's just he's got somebody out there funding his movies.
Yeah.
You know, like if like, I'm sure
there's but they apparently make money.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand it. Because, like, who's watching them? Who's, like, the 7.6 rating? Like, who's...
The 7.6 rating is weird to me. It really is.
Well, I think probably the majority of people on IMDb that rate this movie, they watch it once, and there are a lot of people that are just really intrigued by what happened. And they give it a pretty good mark, because they can't really bash it because they don't understand what's going on. And there's probably a lot of people that turn it on, and because they don't understand what else, it loses them completely.
Yeah.
But I bet you the way the movie is designed, the people that are going to watch it and just be like, are going to not be intrigued by the mystery of it, are just going to tap out in the first 5 minutes. And you probably don't get a bad rating then. Because people that watch a movie for 5 minutes are probably not going to be in tune to go to IMDb and rate that movie.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You kind of want, if you want to have integrity, you got to finish the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is odd though. Like, I had I use Letterboxd, you know, so I had the Letterboxd up seeing, like, who's in the movie, who made the movie, that sort of thing. And on Letterboxd, it has a 4 out of 5. So basically an 8 out of 10 on IMDb. And I saw that, I was like, ooh, 4 out of 5, that's really high. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, this must be one of those weird letterbox things where the letterbox are like the weird movie people. And if I go to IMDb, it's not going to have 8 out of 10 on IMDb. It's going to have 4 out of 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And apparently that's not the case. Apparently it did have almost an 8 out of 10 on IMDb. Yeah.
But I bet you.
I was really surprised that the general movie going public thinks as highly as the weird ass movie people do.
But I bet you, if you look at it too, I bet you the amount of ratings on IMDb for this movie are very low.
I don't know. I mean, maybe, but it's been out a long time.
So, but I wonder if you look at, like, a comparable movie of this from the same era, I bet you the other.
Oh yeah, wouldn't have as many ratings as, like, Armageddon or something.
Well, that I said comparable movie. Armageddon's like a big box office budget.
What are you saying is comparable?
I don't know.
I misunderstand.
I don't even know. Would Lost Highway have been in theaters?
Oh, sure.
Probably.
Yeah,
but it's not going to be Armageddon. It's going to be one of the. It's going to be on one screen.
You're crapping on Armageddon?
You know.
He's just fucking with you at this point, Eric. So
I thought you meant like a movie that had been out the same amount of time. That's how. Yeah, I
that's
you
what
meant.
I'm saying. It's like the same year, but it's also
Armageddon's like 98. This is like 99.
Okay, but Armageddon was a blockbuster movie.
He's fucking
Gavin.
With you, Eric.
Yeah,
it's 1 year difference, man.
No, I'm not even talking about the year. I'm talking about the fact that Armageddon is not the same as The Lost Highway. Armageddon was a massive blockbuster movie.
Yeah.
It was a masterpiece.
David Lynch's.
It was I thought that's what he was going to say. It was a masterpiece. And he said massive block.
All right, whatever.
Armageddon, you know, it's like Deep Impact, but good.
Yeah. No, I mean, so, but who, the guy that, okay, so Eric, you got a lot of, like you, when we started the podcast, you went through like basically like the meaning of the entire thing,
Okay.
The prevailing, the guy that is the really creepy guy who in real life who killed his
so they're
wife.
Like Robert yeah. Blake or
Robert
whatever.
Blake yeah. yeah Bobby Blake
okay what was what is your theory on him?
He is like his guide. He's his guide as he goes through becoming insane. He's kind of like helping him along.
Okay.
As he so if you looked at it from the perspective of he's not really there, I would go about as to say. And you can argue this because, like, Mr. Eddie, like, I don't know if Mr. Eddie actually talks to him, but they're in the same room together and uh-huh. stuff like that, almost like they're together. But he does hand him the phone. But I take him as being just, like, somebody that's kind of, I don't know if he's really guiding him or if he's just, like, an illusion
yeah.
that shows him going insane. Yeah. And that's the same with, like, the tapes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was another
That's
thing.
Just him slipping. Those are signs of him losing his mind.
Being the paranoia yeah. aspect
yeah,
of it.
And I agree with that. That part, I get the same feeling is Bobby Blake is credited as Mystery Man. That's what the characters call it, Mystery Man.
Okay.
And yeah, to me, it's like he is the dark part of Bill Pullman or
and
whatever his mind.
That's probably a really good way to put it.
Because
yeah.
like the when he says, you know, I'm already at your house and I can't go in where I'm not wanted, that's like him saying, you have these dark urges, you want to kill your wife. I wouldn't be here if you didn't want me to be here.
Yeah. Okay. And he also makes the comment that he's like, why are you here or whatever? And he's like, you invited me here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of like he's welcoming this part of him in yeah. or whatever.
So I am confused about the scene with Mr. Eddie on the phone with him. That is weird. But other than that, I think the Mystery Man is easily like dismissed as just,
yeah.
you know, Bill Pullman's like, because most of the time, like when he's at that party, nobody thinks it's weird. There's like this pale, creepy dude there.
So right. And the other thing is like I said, when he says at the beginning, he likes to remember things, not necessarily the way they happen, but how he remembers them happening.
Okay.
Yeah. So he might remember it as him and Mr. Eddie being on the phone together or whatever, but that's yeah. not necessarily how it happened because...
So basically what we're seeing is how he chose to remember it, so there's little coherence to it.
Yeah.
So like the scene when they're...
You're seeing things as an insane person. Somebody that is on the brink of going insane yeah. is seeing
where
things.
Where you almost have short periods of things making sense and then something random then like that's weird, that's kind of connected but not really. Mm. So, like, the scene when they're in when Bill Pullman is in, he gets convicted of killing his wife, and he goes in prison, and he's sitting down on the bed. And then the next scene, that's when it switches over, mm-hmm. where you were like, it's going to switch over soon. So, at that point, who do you think that other character represents? Not Bill Pullman, the kid.
That's the other identity that Bill Pullman creates for himself. So, he's in prison.
Yeah.
In his mind, just creates a new identity for himself.
Okay.
So he becomes.
So he's still in prison then? And then the rest of the yeah. movie is just him kind of.
Yeah, that's everything else that happens after that is more or less in his mind. He's locked in prison. And again, the weirdness of this is that like in the movie, the guards come in, open the door, and it's actually Balthazar Getty in prison, not Bill Pullman.
Right.
But. Again, I think that's just symbolic that this is in Bill Pullman's head. So Bill Pullman thinks it would be Balthazar Getty because now he thinks he's Balthazar Getty, but he's really not. He's
still stuck in that jail cell. Yeah. But
as Bill Pullman.
As Bill Pullman, but now he's...
But in his mind, he's off doing all this other stuff.
And this goes back to Eric's point before. Like, now whether what Eric is saying right now is correct or not does not matter.
Right.
That what matters is the fact that it's not just completely random stuff. You're able to pull out of it and get meaning. It might not be the correct meaning, but you're able to get meaning out of it. So so it's not as random as it appears.
Yeah.
Because there's enough there for people to make their own whatever out of it.
I think that's what makes what he does brilliant.
Yeah.
And I would be intrigued to do this with another David Lynch movie to see if you could go down that rabbit hole and come up with something similar.
This might be the most incoherent of his movies.
Yeah, so like that's the thing is like I could probably do it with something that is a little bit more pulled together, a little bit more cohesive. This one was just too much. I was just like, what the fuck?
And like, I'll be honest with you, like I would never come to this just by watching the movie. It was just like, dude, I spent like 2 weeks online reading blogs about it and stuff trying to figure it out.
What do you think? Like, let's just pretend that like when you were younger, you'd never seen it. And we were like, today was the first time you saw it. How would you feel about it, do you think?
I'm pretty sure. I can tell you because I remember exactly how I felt about it the first time I ever watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for one thing, probably never ever would have watched it.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's totally not my thing.
Yeah.
But I remember the first time I ever watched it, leaving it, thinking, I mean, all I could think was that, God, that was just fucking weird.
Yeah.
It just left me with this weird feeling of, like I almost had to know what was happening.
Yeah.
Because it was just so bizarre.
So I'm going to say, I think you need to see Jacob's Ladder. Because this is a very similar, it's a much more cohesive kind of version of something going on in someone's head, playing out on the screen, and it being...
Is that a hint of an upcoming...
Yeah.
So should I make Jacob's Ladder my next choice?
Maybe. I would like to make it my next choice, and I might, but I got a few more.
But for our listeners, we have to get back to horror movies.
Yeah, well, it is a horror movie.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, Jacob's Ladder is horror. Okay. Yeah.
It's just not a trash horror movie. It's got... what's the guy's name in that? I'm blanking on it. Really big actor. Haven't seen him in a while. But
is that the guy from The Thing?
No.
The stuff?
No.
And the who and the what?
Anyway.
Yeah.
He's got a big actor in it.
Yeah.
He's a really good actor. Tim Robbins.
Oh, okay. Tim Robbins. I know Tim Robbins.
Oh, yeah, that guy. That guy with the thing and stuff.
That guy.
He does a pretty good crazy person. So
it's very good, and I think you would like it because it's similar to this in where there's like a character. I don't want to say too much about the movie because we'll watch it and I want it to be fresh for you, but it's basically like. Most of the movie is going on in his head.
I definitely want to see it again.
Good. Maybe
I had only seen it once, and I know it's considered a classic,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't dislike it, but I didn't love it. I would not have said this is a classic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe it'll hit me different the second time.
I think it's a classic, but it's they remade it a few years back, and I never watched it.
Why?
Yeah, that's why I never watched it. I was like, and I heard it was bad. I mean, I have no doubt that it's because it's a tough movie to remake. You know, I mean, it's not a movie that's like really special effects heavy or something where they can do something that they couldn't do back then or anything. Yeah. It's the storyline and how the movie is put together, those different fragments of this guy's mind that give you a whole story by the end of it that still doesn't quite make. You know, it's not like all the pieces of the puzzle come together, but it gives you kind of a sense of what's going on.
Yeah.
And they, like, how do you remake that and make it any better? You know?
Well, we'll do that one on the next one, so.
Yeah, I don't even know who is next on that. I think
I
it's
don't remember
Gavin.
Anymore.
I think it's you.
Is it me?
Yeah, because I had Chuck Norris.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's okay. Right. So right. It is Gavin.
Yeah.
So, but
well,
before
I'm not picking Jacob's Ladder, so that'll have to wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before, but do we want to talk about this anymore? Or yeah, should we do ratings?
I feel like this conversation could go on a long
time. Oh, yeah,
time.
Dude. I'll be honest with you. This is just one of those movies to me that is so... It's just so weird that you could pick any character in it in this movie and evaluate them for like an hour and try to figure out like, okay, why did that happen? Why did this happen? Blah, blah, blah.
Well, I would like to, you know, I feel like I have judged, I've judged David Lynch pretty harshly. Just based on probably this movie,
but
honestly.
But that's fair.
But, well, the thing is, there's a lot that
you're
I haven't...
You're welcome to your opinion.
Yeah. There's a lot that I haven't seen by him, though. I've only seen, like, a few
You're
movies.
A knowledgeable film watcher. You can have your opinions.
But I can have an opinion.
You don't have to like David Lynch just because they tell you you have to.
No. I know. But here's the thing, is I've seen Blue Velvet. I've seen this one. And I think I've seen one... I saw
You've
Eraserhead.
Seen Mulholland Drive, I'm sure.
I've seen Mulholland Drive, but I don't remember that one either. And you know, when I'm younger too, it's a lot harder for me to like when I'm watching movies. I've watched a lot of movies at this point, so I think I could, you know, a lot of times there's movies that I really loved when I was younger, and I go back and I watch now, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, you know. And it goes the opposite way too. You know, there's some things I might take out of it now than I that
Do
I
we need to before. Watch Wild at Heart.
I would watch another David Lynch movie because I want to get an idea of like, because if this is one of his most incoherent movies, then I might be able to appreciate some of the things that he does.
I don't know that I want to bump it up to my next pick.
No,
but,
I don't need for the podcast.
But I was like, I could add Wild at Heart to my list because, it is a David Lynch, Nicolas Cage musical.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
I'm sure you want that.
I think that's probably the biggest thing is that I think you captured it perfectly, Gavin, first of all, David Lynch isn't going to be for everybody, but the biggest thing is that you have to really go into the movie and realize like that you're white. I am white. You're watching a painting.
Yeah.
You're watching a painting,
yeah.
And what you see on the screen is very deceptive. It's not as simple as just a typical movie you would watch. It's not as simple as Armageddon.
Yeah.
Because some of the things might not really be happening in real life. Some of the things, you know, there's just so much imagery that's
Armageddon
going on there.
Does have that really symbolic animal cracker scene.
Okay.
I mean, at that moment when the animal crackers are walking across her back,
yeah.
Like it seems like this cutesy little romantic moment,
yeah.
But it's to remind us of all the life on Earth that's going to be extinguished.
Yeah,
camels and bears. Yeah. Like, it's a crucial, it's a poignant emotional scene, really.
Yeah, yeah. Now I kind of want to watch Armageddon.
Yeah.
There. Damn it.
I pulled that out of my ass, but it sounded good.
I never thought that we'd be watching Lost Highway and the movie Armageddon would come up.
It's so much.
I mean, the two things are just so far from each other.
Unlike Independence Day.
Well, Independence Day has the Bill Pullman
yeah, effect.
It's got Bill Pullman. Yeah. So.
Anything else, or should we go into ratings?
Ratings.
I think, for me, it's really tough to talk about it because it's seemingly so random that it's hard to... Because normally when we do these podcasts, it's like, well, what did you think of this, you know, particular scene or that scene? Or, like, what did you think of, you know, like, the payoff at the end or the... You know, and it really
it doesn't have any of
that. Yeah, like I'm just trying to think of the random scenes I watched for like 2 hours and come, you know.
And that's what I think you have to realize is so brilliant about this is that for all intents and purposes, that movie should be dreadfully awful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know that I've ever met anybody that has watched that movie and said, God, that was fucking awful.
I met somebody who did.
Have you?
Yeah, his name was Jack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, we should mention my son watched it, and at the end of it, I give this movie 1 star.
but at the same time, yeah. By the time we left, he was already up to 3.
That's so true. So I think he felt bad. I think it's because of what you're doing to me right now, and I'm feeling bad. So now I have to give
it was a 1 star, but it had boobs. I guess it's 2.
Well, I want to put out there that you can hate it all you want. I don't care.
No, I just think it's.
I think it's fascinating.
I think it's just like I do like that type of movie. So, you know, like that's where I feel like I'm a little more like I sound aggressive about my hatred for David Lynch, but it's because like I've seen movies where there's like, you know, I'm going to mention Jacob's Ladder again, where it's like where it's a big like concept, you know, and then they're going to, you know, show a lot of random things, but there is an overall sort of underlying purpose to what's going on, you know, even if it doesn't like you could like even Jacob's Ladder, I'm sure, because that might be my next pick for when it gets around to me.
I feel like now you've got to do it.
Yeah, I kind of have to now, but like it's one of those things where like you could probably pick out certain scenes and be like, well, that doesn't really add up with this, but the overall movie kind of pushes you to by the end of it to think, okay, you know, was this a fever dream he had? Like, which parts are real, which parts aren't? You know, I think you're really going to enjoy that movie, honestly.
And it almost sounds to me like the only difference between that movie and probably this movie is just that this movie really doesn't have any guidance.
Yeah.
Guiding you through, like, what's happening.
That's the
thing. You really have to make it yourself, because there's nothing to tell you what anything is, right? Wouldn't you agree with that?
The weird thing with like Lost Highway is so the guy who wrote Lost Highway is Barry Gifford, who's the same guy who wrote Wild at Heart, and Barry Gifford is not nuts like at all.
Okay,
so how David Lynch gets his stuff, I don't know, but he's like, he's said this is what I wrote. And then David Lynch is like, yeah, that's not what the movie is. So like David Lynch even says the guy who wrote the movie is wrong about the movie.
So what we should do is find out, like read what the movie was about.
So and then what Barry Gifford has said what he meant the movie to be about?
Yeah, and I don't fully understand it, but it's like he says that when the movie switches over, it's... And this might be what you were saying. It's Bill Pullman going into a fugue state. And I don't know what a fugue state is, but apparently that is...
It's like blacking out.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, that's what he wrote it as, is at that point his mind has turned into this other mental
awareness. I guess that's kind of what I have. I thought of it more as, like multiple personalities or something, and he's, like, splitting off. And then... Like at the end of the movie, if you notice, it seemed like he was going to split off again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, when because he's like he was driving the down the car and he was going just like that, and that's exactly what happened when he became Pete Dayton.
So he's maybe going back to being Pete Dayton, and
No, I think he was going to become somebody else. Oh, he was creating a different identity for himself.
Yeah.
So
I think they need to make another like a sequel just about or a prequel just about Mr. Eddy.
Yeah, they do.
And that's just, you know,
they do. Although I think Mr. Eddy's the actor, I think, is dead now.
Yeah.
Tell me, would you have not liked a little more Richard Pryor?
Fucking.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Pryor was, I mean, he was only in it for a very short period of time, but definitely he definitely need awesome.
More Mr. Eddy, but Richard Pryor was good.
It was really interesting to see Gary Busey not being full on Gary Busey. He actually had some, there was one scene where he's like crying, where it's like a really good emotional performance,
it was a complete waste of casting, really.
It really was, because, I mean, they can get anybody to like cry on film.
No, but I mean,
but you can't get somebody to do the weird shit he does.
But if you're gonna get him, you're gonna get him to do something weird. Like you could have any random actor who you've never heard of do what he did.
Right. Yeah, I was really surprised at how many huge celebrities were in this movie. Like a lot of big celebrities were in this movie.
Yeah,
that really surprised me because, I mean. Like, at this point when this movie came out, David Lynch was a well-known name.
Yeah.
But it just... that many in this movie. Because it's not.
But I mean, we're talking a lot of cameo appearances. Yeah, too. Yeah, you know, like you think about a lot of the big names. They were there for I mean, we're talking like a day of probably shooting for each of them. You know,
that's true.
So and I would imagine, I don't know, would Bill Pullman or Patricia Arquette, and I mean, they were probably known, but they probably weren't huge at
Patricia. You don't think so? I mean, Bill Pullman had to have been.
Yeah,
Bill would Pullman he have been? Was. Okay.
And Patricia Arquette was well known too at this point, I'm pretty sure. This wasn't like when Nightmare on Elm Street 3 came out.
No.
This was way.
I don't know if she was huge, but she was known. Sure. Yeah.
And I would assume that they were both known. I just wouldn't think that they would be at the highest point in their career. Yeah. They would be
on
the climb up.
I feel like Bill Pullman's peak is like Independence Day.
Yeah. Patricia Arquette didn't really have like a rocket up to like the top of a celebrity list. Like she just kind of, you know, like she did this.
She and was she did, just always around.
She was just always around. Like, you remember she did the movie Stigmata?
Yeah.
That was that was in the late 90s. But it never, like, her career never just like skyrocketed.
She's done a lot of great things, but I don't think she's like a name that you can say to people and they know who that is.
I think,
you know, the people who are into movies know, but
yeah. I think at this point, because she's been in enough things, and she also had a television show called Medium, too.
Yeah, which was pretty huge, too.
It was. There's a lot of people who watched that. So, I think
probably what she's best known for today.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's, at that point, though, it was, you know, an appropriate role for her to be.
To be the naked person?
To be the naked chick.
Well, and it seems like Patricia Arquette has no problem with that. You know,
I had no problem with that.
Yeah. I didn't either. Yeah. Maybe not now. Today's Patricia Arquette.
I don't know.
She's pretty old now, I think.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know.
And chunky too.
I don't know.
She's put on some weight, man.
Yeah. But
I think she goes up and down, actually.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'm not judging.
Yeah.
Well, she's probably, I mean, she's got to be like in her upper 50s at this point.
She's got to be.
I'm not judging her.
So she probably looks really good for upper 50s.
I'm not gonna shame Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, so, I wouldn't do that.
But we're going to switch over to ratings now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go first because I assume I'm going to give it the highest rating.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Gavin likes to surprise us with his ratings. So,
I have mine firmly in mind. So we'll see where it goes here.
Now, a lot of nostalgia in this, but I'm actually going to give this a 7.
Okay.
Because I think it's clever, and I think it makes you really think about, it's a movie that you will not leave your mind after watching it. You're gonna keep thinking about like what the fuck was happening, and I think that's appealing style of movie, and like you said, it's just not done enough. So
that's it.
That's all I got.
Oh, okay.
You want more than that?
No, that's fine. That was a quick rating there.
Yeah.
Who wants it?
You got it.
Okay. So I don't know if this is going to be a surprise, but I'm also going 7.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I want to
lay out some foundation here. I don't want to just say 7 and be like, pass it on.
I thought I laid out some foundation.
But... Now, well, for my rating, okay. And so I go on Letterboxd. I see it's like 4 out of 5, which I'm like, this seems kind of high. And I look at who my Letterboxd friends are, and they're all like 4, 4.5, 5. And I'm like, really? Which is weird because there's a range of opinion there, but they're all consistently like, yeah. So I'm like, this is weird. I'm like, I don't feel that way at all. And I think if I came to this movie today for the first time, I would be lower. I would probably be closer to a 5.
Oh, see, and I would say that would take it down to a 4 for me.
Okay.
So just a...
but the thing is very much, Eric, you nailed it, nostalgia. This is a nostalgia film for me. This is a late 90s movie. This is the only movie that I'm aware of, probably wrong on this, but that immediately comes to mind where the soundtrack sold it as a David Lynch movie. Like, David Lynch is not known for his soundtracks, but this was a soundtrack movie, very much. And I think at the time that it came out in the late 90s, I mean, I was already big into movies, but I don't think I was quite at that point yet where I knew all the names and I knew all the this and that. And so I couldn't have been like, oh, yeah, it could have possibly been the first David Lynch I saw. I presume I saw Blue Velvet before that, but I'm not 100%.
Yeah. Or did you get turned on to David Lynch because of Nine Inch Nails? Because
that's
of Lost
that's what I think happened. And that's probably that's what I think happened is I think it came out at a time when Nine Inch Nails, Marilyn Manson, and to some degree Smashing Pumpkins were Rammstein were all like a thing, and it was like, oh, so this movie is riding on that. Mm-hmm. And I think that really sucked me in, and it came out at that time in my life, late 90s, where I'd loved movie. I still do, but I mean, those are the ones that like stick with you at that age. So wrapping this back around, I'm giving the rating of 7 because this soundtrack elevates this movie for me because it hits me. I'm like, oh yeah, there's that jam. Boom.
Yeah.
And like, yes, there's Patricia Arquette. There's Mr. Eddie. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it brings me back to like when I really loved every movie for some reason. I'm not Eric. Some movies are crap, but but yeah, if I watched it today for the first time, never having seen it before, and I had to compare it to everything I have seen before, I'd be like, this is weird, especially within his own Lynch's own canon. Like, I think this is a weak one in his canon.
Yeah. Like, if you didn't have the name David Lynch attached to this movie and you just put this movie in and you hadn't seen it before,
I think that would lower it as well.
Yeah.
I do think just slapping his name on it gives it some kind of bonus points.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there is that as well.
But anyway, I'm
saying 7, but I want to be very clear that that is riding on nostalgia. And if this was not David Lynch and not something that I came up through in the 90s, I'd be closer to a 5.
Okay. So I'm going to just mention some of the things you just said with the soundtrack. Definitely awesome. That soundtrack, I think, was ingenious because there was a big, like when we were, you know, 16 years old or whatever, 14 to 16 years old, when Nine Inch Nails got big and everything, for them to be smart enough to put those artists on the soundtrack and, mm-hmm. and very much like, you know, other soundtracks at the time that really stand out, like The Crow, Spawn, those ones. I mean,
yeah.
Half the time.
Crow is great. Spawn is like a
yeah.
flawless soundtrack.
Yeah. And even when the movie sucks, like Spawn.
Yeah.
Like you're like,
Come on.
Man. Come on. Okay. Let's just say it wasn't as good as it could have been.
The greatest movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you know, it's iconic for that. Like yes. because it has that they took so many of those great artists on one. It's almost like a full album that you can listen to start to finish, where instead of like nowadays, if there is a soundtrack to something, it's like you get this one song from an artist you like that just happens to be on the soundtrack. They made original songs for this movie.
They made original songs.
You know, there's some that were, you know, like obviously the Marilyn Manson, you know, I Put a Spell on You. But Apple of Sodom was new. He made that for this.
Yeah.
Nine Inch Nails, Driver Down is new.
Yeah.
That was not, you know, previously ever released. You know, I think the Smashing Pumpkins, That was new. So, you know,
I don't think the Rammstein was new, but I don't think that Rammstein was quite big yet. Yeah. I think that album kind of helped break them.
Yeah. So I think that the soundtrack was really ingenious in getting a whole lot of people that maybe wouldn't have gotten into David Lynch.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I
because
think
it
that's
is a lot of the same of type of people. The people that like that weird music are also going to like
David
this type
Lynch.
Of a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was really ingenious. So I got to give them props for that. I'm saying all the good things first.
Okay.
So, you know, that I give them props for. I will give them props for the fact that, you know, the idea of what, you know, doing the podcast here, you've kind of like my rating has kind of gone up a little bit since we've started talking about it, because for me, there wasn't enough there to create the imagery, or to create the ideas in my head of what might be going on. Mm-hmm. For me, it was like it like I said earlier, it seemed like the difference between, you know, someone saying, well, that's just his style, well, like it's also just boring, you know. Yeah. Like I really get upset at pretentious things sometimes when unless it's there's a hell of a fucking payoff. You know, if something seems really pretentious to me and there's not a lot of substance there, I tend to just like get more extreme about my opinion on it.
Sucks.
What does?
The fountain sucks.
Yes. Yes.
That, you think so? I thought you liked it.
No, I do. I do like it. But I also think that it, that's where I'm a hypocrite. You know, like, and that's the thing is like, there's movies that I really like that are disjointed like that. One of the movies you just mentioned, that The Fountain, very disjointed. He was supposed to have Brad Pitt. This is a Darren Aronofsky for the listener, movie. It was supposed to be his big masterpiece. Okay. Mm-hmm. He had Brad Pitt attached to the movie. Brad Pitt decided to bail on it at the last minute. Oh, and nice. With Brad Pitt went like half his fucking budget. So instead of doing all these big epic scenes that he had planned for it, he had to try to like work within a budget. So there was a lot of things that were supposed to be heavily CGI, really well done, that instead he had to get creative about. The ways he went about it were great. The ways he went about it, but it seems disjointed. It seems like it doesn't completely make sense. But even that movie still is a perfect example, because there is an overarching like theme in the movie. And it is about like death. And
I felt like it was presenting itself as this incredibly deep movie, and it didn't hit me that way at all. Now, granted, it's been a long time since I saw it, I was not impressed.
You may want to watch it again, but probably not. I don't know. I took from that movie something totally different. I thought it was about themes of death, real gritty, like death in your face. Someone you love is dying, and what that really looks like and how you deal with that. And how there's different ways you can go.
I can give it another shot. I mean, I like his other stuff, so it's not that I dislike him. Yeah. But
if you're looking for it to make total sense, it won't. But it also, it's the acceptance of death and everything else, and reincarnation and all these different themes. And there's multiple timelines where these things play out.
It probably makes more sense than Mother.
Yeah. See, I feel like that movie's not the best comparison to this, because there was that. Mm-hmm. It did have a lot of things that pushed you in that direction, like gave you the information. Now, I would say as far as like just entertainment wise, I'll just give you my rating and then I'll kind of explain it. I would have given this movie a 3 at like before doing this.
Okay.
I'm giving it a 4.5. Okay. The reason I'm giving it a 4.5 is because I think that you can do what he did and still make it entertaining enough to keep people glued to the screen. Whereas I felt like they didn't give you enough, and his version of like his style was not, it didn't help to bring me in to the movie. And this is like personal preference.
And obviously. It totally is. Yeah.
Yeah. Like this is just like, you know, for me, I needed more. I needed more, to really bring me in and make me think about what was going on. But it really didn't invoke that in me. All I kept thinking was, what the fuck is going on? Instead of trying to come up with it in my mind, it was more like, this doesn't make any sense, you know? So that's where I'm giving it a 4.5, only because the soundtrack, like I said, that was genius. And I think that it did try. It just, for me, it missed the mark.
Mm. And I also think now you should, within the next decade, go back and watch it again and keep in mind everything we talked about on this podcast, because I do think it'll get better.
Maybe.
That if you keep in mind what we talked about and you see that in the movie, you'll be like, that kind of makes more sense.
Don't give up, Jason. It gets better.
You know, what might make it better, honestly, is seeing some of his other movies that are easier, more palatable.
Yeah, and then you might be able to get more of a gist of his style, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I don't know about that. But I did want to add one more thing, because you guys started talking about the soundtracks.
Yeah.
And I don't remember where I read this, but I know that also this movie got a ton of buzz in the industrial world.
Mm-hmm.
Because when this movie came out, I believe at the same time Mortal Kombat came out.
Okay.
So now Trent Reznor did this soundtrack. Chris Randall did Mortal Kombat.
Okay.
And Chris Randall is the guy from Sister Machine Gun.
Okay.
And I believe that there was like a big fight between Trent Reznor and Chris Randall about which one was going to be the bigger soundtrack.
Really?
So that just popped into my head as we were talking.
I don't know anything about that.
That's interesting.
Which one's the better soundtrack?
I would say Lost Highway has got to be.
I would say too, but Mortal Kombat's a solid soundtrack.
Yeah, it but is. I would also say that which soundtrack probably sold more copies? Probably Mortal Kombat, because yeah. Mortal Kombat was a pretty big movie. I can't imagine that Lost Highway like, even compared.
I don't know, because people like you and I were really into that stuff. Like you said, I think was the genius of having these artists like Smashing Pumpkins, Nine Inch Nails, putting music that was not previously released on any of their albums. So that means you have to go out and you got to buy that if you want to hear that song.
Was Perfect Drug on Lost Highway soundtrack?
Yes, it was.
Yes, I believe it was, which is probably one of my favorite Nine Inch Nails.
I'm saying that had to have driven sales.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like that song alone, you know, for any Nine Inch Nails fan, which there was a fucking ton of them out there.
It would be interesting to see which soundtrack sold more. Yeah, because just because of the fact that I still feel like
it could be. Right? I think it could go either way.
Nine Inch Nails, like, I mean,
everybody loved the Mortal Kombat theme, man.
It's a sweet theme.
Sister Machine Gun was a fly on the wall compared to Nine Inch Nails, right?
At all
points in time, pretty much.
But it wasn't about Sister Machine Gun. If Sister Machine Gun, that name was the one thing being sold, it'd be different. But it was the Mortal Kombat theme song played in many different versions.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I remember having that soundtrack. I had both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't remember everything that was on the Mortal Kombat one, whereas I can remember everything that's on Lost Highway, but I know that, you know, it was something people bought.
Yeah.
So it would be nice to see, like, you know, which one actually sold more copies.
Yeah, but I know it was a big, big spat. Like, I don't know.
That's interesting.
I think I heard of that there's
a spat like that even happen?
You know what, though?
Yeah.
Okay, so Chris Hall.
How are they in competition, really? I mean, you can buy two albums.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I think a lot of it had to do with Chris Randall, because I know that Chris Hall told me, you know who Chris Hall is, right?
Yeah.
He told me that Chris Randall hated
For the listeners,
him.
Chris Hall is the lead singer of Standing Westward.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Randall hated his guts.
Chris Hall?
For some reason, yeah. He's like, oh God, Chris Randall hated me I asked him why, and he's like, I think it was because I don't think it was Pig Face, but it was like a band like Pig Face. Mm-hmm. They both tried out, and Chris Hall got the gig, and Chris Randall didn't. And from
Isn't
that day
fucking,
forward,
what a reason to hate somebody that they just get a job that you didn't.
Yeah, and I think based on that, the reason why I bring that up is because I think that Chris Randall was just that guy.
Yeah,
that like. You know, if you got something he didn't get or whatever, he hated you.
Yeah.
You know, so he probably hated everybody in the industrial scene.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
All right, I've consulted the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't have exact numbers, but I can tell you which soundtrack sold more.
Which one?
Which one do you think?
I'm going with Lost Highway.
I'm going to say Mortal Kombat.
It was Mortal Kombat.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit. But you know what it is? It's that, like, that name, Mortal Kombat name.
Well, it's a name. That movie was huge, dude.
It was fucking huge.
Yeah. You can't, not even putting David Lynch's name on The Lost Highway is going to make it bigger than Mortal Kombat.
Or any of the artists that were on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, who the hell was on the soundtrack?
For
Mortal Kombat?
Was there anybody notable?
I don't know. Gravity Kills, KMFDM, Tracy Lords, Orbital, Fear Factory, Sister Machine Gun, Typo Negative.
So that was a lot of big names on there.
I forgot who was on there. If you would have named that list before, I would have went with Mortal Kombat.
I mean, none of those are as big a names as
Trent Reznor.
As Nine Inch Nails, Smashing Pumpkins.
Or Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, those are bigger names, but...
But this
is like peak techno.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and you got the combination of the names and the Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah.
You know, but those two things, you're going to beat out just about anybody.
Yeah.
All right, so we've talked about this. This one went a long time, so
I'm not surprised.
I think we're going to swing over to Gavin.
Hey, what's up?
I think we should have done this and timed it out that we had to watch it just as long as the movie was.
What do you got a movie in mind for next time? Do you want me to choose out of your pile of
No,
three?
I know what I'm doing next time.
Okay.
I've got a pick, and it's It's the greatest movie we've ever watched for this podcast.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
what is it?
Yeah, I don't know. That's Barbie? Hard. No. It's Pieces. We're gonna watch Pieces.
Is it the unrated version or whatever?
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay, because I know there's two different versions. So
is it on Blu-ray? Because I hear that people don't watch DVDs anymore.
It's on Blu-ray.
Nice.
All it's right. on Blu-ray, so that means we're gonna get like 10 minutes till the end of the movie, and then it's gonna lock up, and we're gonna have to fast forward play. Back. To
Do you know what year that movie came out?
Pieces.
Yeah,
I think 82.
82.
Wow. Okay.
Something, so, but it was 80s for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. All right.
I knew it had to be late 70s or very early
80s. I could be off by a year or two, but I think it's 82.
So. Okay. Normally, at this point in time in the podcast, I would say, we'll be back in 2 weeks with Pieces, but it doesn't seem like that happens anymore. Yeah. So, we'll be back when we're back with Pieces. Back How's when we're that? Back with Pieces.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully.
Pieces is so good.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning Reese's in. Pieces. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to Hobbs and Horror Movie Review Podcast. Join us in 2 weeks for another exciting movie review.